to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, this is Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and big news this week is of course my thriller novel Pentecost is all go. Yes, it's out there, it's selling, it's happening, it's very exciting. I might sound quite tired, but I am really excited. It's finally out there and you know everything's prepared. I have, well first of all it's available on Amazon.com. as Kindle and print format. So the Kindle's $2.99, the print is $8, so I've tried to keep everything as low as possible. It's also available on amazon.co.uk in Kindle and print as well. It's on barnesandnoble.com. I haven't gone for the iPad and all that yet, but I will be putting the EPUB available for sale as well. So yeah, it's pretty much all go on the Pentecost front. I have written probably 20 guest posts, including interviews, Q&As, I've been doing videos, audios, loads and loads of things on top of the kind of the usual stuff. So I'm pretty excited about how it's going to go. I will, of course, be reporting back to you. We will be having a podcast as well, me and Zoe Winters. Zoe will be returning in a couple of weeks' time when we will be discussing our book launches together. Zoe's with Save My Soul and mine with Pentecost. So between the two of us, we should be able to give you guys quite a lot of marketing tips of what worked, what didn't work, etc. So I'm really interested. If you do read Pentecost and you like it, please would you write a little review on amazon.com or amazon.co.uk. It does make a difference to people buying the book, so I'd really appreciate that if you like it. And of course, please let me know any questions or any feedback. This is the daunting phase as an author, as I've been finding with the sort of pre-release copies that I'd got some feedback on. You start getting, you know, comments that perhaps aren't as flattering as you were hoping for, but amusingly this is exactly what one should expect as a writer, so I'm learning to deal with that. And if the worst criticism I get is, oh, it's like Dan Brown, then that's fine, because Dan Brown's like a multimillionaire. So I certainly don't write as verbosely as him. I'm pretty tight in my writing, I think. So anyway, I'm interested in what you think, so please let me know. Yeah, so I'm proud of the book. I've got print copies here. Hopefully you will have seen the pictures and things. So yeah, and I'm really ready to get into writing Prophecy, which is the next one in the series. I've basically stopped writing for the last 2 months stopped writing fiction because I've been preparing for the launch, launching another blog, Mystery Thriller TV, and some other things. So and keeping up with normal blogging and the day job and all of that. So I'm really looking forward to getting into Prophecy, the next phase of preparation, which is gathering the material, thinking about the plot, the fun bit, I guess, the bit where I get to make things up again. So I'm really looking forward to that. So it's all go. So coming up, I have an interview with the lovely Ian Broom. You'll have two British accents to listen to for a while. And Ian, I really like this interview because Ian has this wonderful patience that I just don't have, and I need to learn about that. So I hope you enjoy the interview. And yeah, please email me with any feedback on the show or on the book or on the blog. You can email me joanna@thecreativepen.com. And of course, I really love to hear from you. I will also answer questions on the podcast if you have any, so please send that in. All right, on with the interview. Hi, everyone. I'm Joanna Penn from the Creative Pen podcast, and today I'm interviewing Ian Broom. Ian is a novelist, professional copywriter, and blogger based in UK. Ian has a popular blog for writers at writeforyourlife.net, and he lives in Sheffield in England. So welcome, Ian.
Thank you very much. Hello. It's nice to be here. Thank you very much for asking me to come on.
No, it's great after talking to you for so long, you know, via email and on Twitter and things. So it's great to have you on the show. So first of all, start off by telling us a bit more about you and your writing background.
As things stand, I have a novel which is with an agent, and I'm also a professional copywriter for a design company in the UK in Sheffield. So I kind of have this sort of dual writing life, and it's been like that for quite a few years now. So I'm 30 now, just turned 30, but I started writing, in earnest when I was about 16 or 17, while I was still at school, and I went to sixth form, and my plan through sixth form, I'd always got my eye on a university course that had a creative writing element, and that really influenced my decision to go to Sheffield Hallam, and I still live in Sheffield now, because their undergraduate degree was unusual in the sense that it had a literature element and a language element, but also this creative writing element as well. And beyond that, this is quite good forward thinking for a 16-year-old. I look back now and think, how the heck did I manage that? But I knew that they had the MA writing, which was this sort of well-reputed course. And I kind of, while I was at sixth form, I was always thinking I would like to do that, or give myself the opportunity to do that. So I never really thought that I would stomach a straight literature degree. Just I was always, you know, wanting to create my own things and do my own thing. So I did that, and I did do the undergraduate degree. I did my creative writing elements and absolutely loved it. Short stories was my thing then. And then I was lucky enough to be accepted onto the MA as well. And I began, I guess, the journey to writing my novel then, which was a good 7 years ago. So it's a very long process, which I'm sure we'll talk about later. But having finished the MA, you then the structure is you write your first 10,000 words as part of a taught course, as taught module, that kind of thing, and then you have to write up the rest of it. So produce a full novel over the course of however many years it takes you to do it. But of course, I was 22, 23, and in debt from being at university and drinking too much and that kind of thing. And I had to get a job. So just like any other person who wants to write a novel, usually they have to work at the same time. And I was no different. So I pretty much got the first writing-related job I could possibly find, and that happened to be for the same university's marketing team. So I had no plans to be a copywriter at that stage. I just wanted to have any sort of job that was related to writing. I'm careful the way I word this, because you never know who ends up watching these things, but it was a touch tedious. At first it was kind of exciting, but after a while, I was basically editing the university prospectuses. So, of course, that's an annual cycle. So after 3 or 4 years of being there, you kind of think, well, there's only so many times you can edit an MSc in maths, science, or whatever it was. That's probably not a course, but you know what I mean. It was quite a repetitive job. Eventually, after 3 or 4 years, I got the job at the workshop, which is where I work now, which is a good design company in the UK. And I'm a copywriter, and I write for websites. I write for big organisations in the UK and international organisations. But throughout that time, I've always been writing my novel in my spare time. Mm. And I've, apart from 2 months where I had, in inverted commas, a sabbatical, which unfortunately coincided with the 2005 Ashes, which I'm sure the American audience won't understand whatsoever, but it's cricket, and it's England v Australia. And unfortunately, my 2 month sabbatical from work, so I could write my novel, coincided with this particular cricket series, and a lot of my time got spent watching that instead. I was young and naive; I would never do such a thing now.
Of course not.
I've been writing my novel throughout that time. Mm. So it's to where I am now, having got an agent. It's taken seven or eight years, really, from doing my master's.
Mm.
That's a long answer, isn't it? Sorry.
No, but what's interesting when listening to your answer is, so you've got 2 degrees in writing and you've got a job in writing and you've got the novel. And I guess when I think about, you know, when I think about me, for example, I've got absolutely no training at all. Now, what do you think the benefit is of all that study, and you know, what do you think you know that I don't know, and can you tell me in like 5 minutes?
Well, I'm certainly not big-headed enough to assume that I know something that you don't know. But I mean, I talked about this on my website, Write for Your Life, a little bit. The biggest thing I got from taking the MA, especially, I mean, the undergraduate degree was great, but of course the MA is just another level completely. Everyone that's on the MA, it's a really high standard of writing. And, you know, my tutors were people like Sean O'Brien. He was my tutor for a while, and he's poetry forward prize winning poet, T.S. Eliot prize winning poet, fantastic. And it, just being around people like that, you can't help but absorb things. So, I mean, I'm not sure whether you can teach creative writing as such. I mean, I think there are elements of the craft, and you can certainly point people in the right direction. But the benefits of being on the MA particularly was just being in that environment constantly, and everything, just learning off other students and being watching other people get critiqued as much as watching your own, having your own writing critiqued. It's just fascinating. It's just, I think it's more just absorbing that kind of environment and being exposed to people who've got, you know, years and years worth of publishing experience or writing experience. Mm. Someone who's published 7 novels from a major publisher, even if you don't like their work particularly, just the fact that they've done that, it's, you sit and you listen, I guess. So I don't, it's difficult to say how much I felt like I was taught or learned, but it was just an invaluable experience for being in an environment where it was professional, great feedback, and with other people whose goals were exactly the same as mine. And we share, you know, we shared experiences and feedback all the time. It's quite a unique environment, but of course expensive as well. I mean, I was lucky enough that my parents decided to back me and paid for most. I worked part time as well, but I mean, yeah, it's not for everyone, and you don't have to do it, but yeah, it's certainly,
no, exactly, and we certainly should say handy. That. Yeah, it's certainly not necessary to do something like that to write a book. In fact, a lot of people don't. So, right. But it's really interesting to me to hear you say that. Okay, so let's talk about your novel, your 7-year novel. So A for Angelica. So tell us, what, just a little bit about the book, and then also how you got an agent, because lots of people are interested in that.
Yeah, of course. Well, first about the book, I guess the problem is it's taken me 7 years and I still haven't found that perfect way of describing it. It's so difficult. Exactly. But it's literary fiction, and it's about a man whose wife's had her second stroke in 18 months. And the novel starts at that point where she's just had this second stroke. And he's the protagonist, and his wife is bedridden throughout the novel, pretty much. Well, she is, apart from the sort of the backstory. And so the crux of the novel really is how he deals with it, and he chooses not to tell anyone. So he's decided, because he's been through it all before, and all the hospital visits, all the sort of unpleasantness of it, he just can't handle going through it all again. He thinks that he can look after her himself. So he doesn't tell anyone that it's happened, and he keeps it secret. And it's, as the novel unfolds, it's obviously that all unravels, and he is unable to keep it a secret. The reason he thinks that he can look after her is because in the 18 months in between, he developed this obsession for writing things down and making notes. So he has notes on everyone everyone on the street, and he spends a lot of time stood by the window making notes on all his neighbours. And the notes are, hence the title is A is for Angelica. And Angelica is the woman that moves in across the road, and she becomes the catalyst for all his secrets unraveling. So it sounds quite macabre and quite dark, but there's lots of kind of jokes in there as well.
Yeah,
it's quite an unusual topic.
Yeah, no, it is. And so tell us about how you got an agent.
How I got an agent, of course. Well, I wrote the novel under sort of slightly unusual circumstances. I wrote the first 10,000 words as part of the MA, and that was kind of the first part that we get marked on. And we had what we call masterclasses. So people would come in from the industry. This is another valuable thing you get from doing these things. And we had an editor come in, and I can't remember who from, and she read the first page of my book, and a very old version of it, and she didn't have much to say about it, just sort of said, yeah, it's fine. It wasn't supposed to be a critique. But then about 3 months later, I got a letter, handwritten letter from a guy from Curtis Brown, it was then, and he said he'd been passed on this small extract and could he see the rest? So I showed him the first 10,000 words. I had no idea what the rest of the novel was going to be like or where I was going to go with it. And he liked the first 10,000 words because make sure you show me when the whole thing was written. So, I mean, that's a really unusual, unheard of thing to happen. I mean, a complete fluke to a degree. I mean, I think a lot of getting an agent and getting published is luck and being in the right place at the right time. So I wrote the rest of the novel all sort of over the course of 4 or 5 years, knowing that at the end of it, I had an agent who was primed and ready to see it and was in, I met him, I went down to see them in their offices and all that kind of thing, which is quite exciting. I mean, that's quite an exciting and unusual thing to happen. But at the same time, it was a lot of pressure. It felt like a lot of pressure. So all the things that we talk about on our blogs, and certainly I do, about dips in confidence, about what to do if you can't get the ideas, it was like that, but times 10, because I knew that if I didn't do it, then I hadn't got anything to send to this agent. Anyway, this is to cut a slightly longer story short. He didn't want it at the end of it, which was fine. I mean, I was kind of prepared for it. I knew that there was no guarantees, but still, it was kind of like all this work, and the guy that I was supposed to be sending it to didn't want it. So in the end, I've just gone through a very typical, traditional, and I'm afraid to say, fairly boring route. I have a friend who used to work for an agency in London, and she just sort of gave me a few suggestions of people who I could send it to, and so I did. I sent it to 2 or 3. Didn't hear back from 2 of them, I don't think. And in the meantime, within about 2 weeks, one of the agencies I sent them to, Tibor Jones, excuse me, got back to me straight away and said, "We love it. Can you send some more?" And I did, and then within about a month, I'd signed the contracts, and that was it. Mm-hmm. So a fairly traditional route, just find one, send them your manuscript, do what they ask for, and then hope for the best, really.
And how's it going? Sold it yet?
No, it's on editors' desks at the moment, waiting for to find out. But the whole, I mean, it's always been a slow process. But I think at the moment, people. I've got very little money, very little budget to spend on new fiction, especially, I guess, to a degree, especially new literary fiction. If it's, you know, slightly, not off the wall, but a slightly, you know, unusual fiction, they need to know that they can sell it at this day and age. Mm. And I think that things take longer. Everything seems to be a bit more of a wait than it was anyway. Yeah. But as long as you go into that knowing that it is going to be a wait, then it's kind of all right. You just get on with doing whatever you need to be doing in the meantime.
I think that's a good point, because you clearly have a lot of patience, and you know, I'm just marveling at your story, because I'm so impatient. I'm just like, wait, what will I have done by this time next year? You know, the next novel's got to be done and out, you know. I just can't wait. So it's really it's great to hear you say that, because you know, for people listening, having your kind of patience is really important, I think, for that traditional route.
Yeah, I mean, and it doesn't happen quickly. There's nothing. I mean, I genuinely think that self-publishing is, if it hasn't lost, it's definitely losing the stigma that it's had for years. I mean, there's lots of legitimate ways of publishing your work, exactly as you are doing, as I think you've said on your blog about it's partly to gain an audience and then try and get through the traditional route later, perhaps. And it's a completely legitimate way of doing it. But I started writing this novel 6 or 7 years ago, when there genuinely was a stigma, and it was, and I would, you know, I just wouldn't have been considered, and especially if you're on an MA writing course when everyone's all relatively hoity-toity, and you know, it's, you know, frankly frowned upon.
Yeah.
And that's not to say I frown upon it, but it was never entered my head, because everyone, you know, I could see that that's how people reacted to the idea of self-publishing. So in my head, I've always wanted to be published traditionally. I think I wrote recently on one of my websites that I can't believe I'm actually going to try and quote myself. That's very tragic, but I'll try anyway. But something along the lines of, I'd give up all the Kindle sales in the world to have my novel available in all formats possible, included in print in my local bookshop or something like that. And I think, I mean, I do kind of feel that way. I'm quite a techno writer. I do all the podcasting and I'm very much keeping up to date with what's going on with ebooks and I read on my iPad, all that kind of thing. But I think deep down I'm still quite a traditional sort when it comes to just wanting my book to be published with a nice hardcover and that kind of thing.
I just hear you say that about the Kindle, and you have heard of Amanda Hocking, have you? Who sold 100,000 books on the Kindle 1 month.
I know there are more and more stories like that. It will happen more and more often.
She's about 23 or something.
That has upset me. I was fine until you said that.
It's like, that's just not fair. You go, girl. You know, fantastic. Anyway, we're going to move on. Everyone knows what I think about self-publishing. So let's talk about your copywriting job, because that interests me as well. Because one of the things that I see on so many blogs, and I'm not saying I'm a great blogger, but it just happens that you and I have blogs that are, you know, semi-successful and, you know, getting traffic and things. And I have been trying to learn copywriting from sites like Copyblogger and from information that I learn. You're a professional copywriter. What are some of the copywriting tips that you can talk about for people to help them with their blogs? It's an entirely different type of writing than novel writing, isn't it?
It is an entirely different type of writing in theory, but my copywriting changed the way I write fiction completely. I think looking back on the short stories that I'd written just before I started working, these are short stories written whilst on the MA. I mean, I'd had lots of experience and, you know, teaching to a degree by then. But when I started my first job, one of the things that they'd asked for on the application form was the ability to edit and write in plain English. And I didn't really know what plain English meant at that stage. But as part of my interview, I was given a 100-word piece of writing, just a standard piece of advertising type thing. And I had to cut it down to 50 words, so halve it without losing the meaning. And I did, and I got the job, and I spent the next 3.5 years doing pretty much the same thing. And doing that out of nowhere, I was able to go back to my fiction and just be absolutely ruthless with the editing. And I've got my novel is written in a fairly minimal sort of style, and that's not to say it's sort of simple. It's just that it's quite straightforward language. And one of my favorite author is Ray Carver, the American short story writer. And I just think that you can write beautiful sentences and paragraphs with just the most straightforward of words or sentence structures. And that came entirely, I'm not saying that I write beautiful sentences, but that ruthless editing came directly from becoming a copywriter. Mm. As for tips, I mean, I one of the things I do is keep we all do at work because I'm part of a team of copywriters, is create a standard words document. Mm. So it's a case of making sure that you track everything. So if it's in blogging, for instance, to make sure that all your titles are written in the same way so that you keep everything consistent. And we do this for each client. So if we have a client called, I can't think of a client, Terry's Washing Machines, then if Terry's Washing Machines has to be written in capitals all the time, then we write that in a separate document. Mm-hmm. Now, you might think that doesn't really transfer to fiction or to blogging, but if you think about the way that you write your titles, if you want your blog to look great and to be consistent and to strengthen your brand, I guess, then it's good to keep a separate document with a list of the way that you do different things, the way that you phrase certain things. So that's one thing I do, and I did it for characters and character names and that kind of thing for my novel. But other than that, there isn't anything. It's just a case of doing it. I mean, I kind of got thrown in the deep end when I started my job at the workshop, which is where I work now for a design company. I was all of a sudden working with these big clients all the time. And of course, before that, I'd just been doing this editing and this writing things in plain English, which was a fantastic experience. But it was I wasn't used to dealing with clients and I don't know, having to be rigorously sort of tested all the time. You know, nothing can be wrong. You're this people are paying an awful lot of money for your sort of skills. So that takes a bit of getting used to. So I don't really know. It's the editing thing. That's the main thing.
No, I think that is really important, because a lot of people who take blogging as more of a personal journaling, which isn't so popular these days in terms of, you know, what popular blogs are, I guess, you know, do tend to go on and on and on about things. And perhaps if they had cut it down a bit, it might have been more pithy, I guess.
Yeah, and it's, I guess so. And it's tough. I mean, I seem to have, on Write For Your Life, which is my main blog, I don't really talk about myself that much at all. And I sometimes become quite aware of it. I worry that it can be quite faceless. And I know that people do enjoy personality that comes across. And of course, the personality, hopefully, that comes across in my voice when I write articles. But I very rarely say things like, I very rarely talk about my novel, for instance. I kind of, I don't know, I don't really know why. I just kind of feel like that's something slightly separate. And if I'm providing writing advice, which is what I try and do, it's more about, I tend to talk more about how to behave or think like a writer, and kind of how to get more confidence, or how to not panic if things aren't going well, that kind of thing. So I try and keep that, my writing, slightly separate. But I know that sometimes I think that I probably should have more personality in it. And are people coming to my website and realizing that this is, you know, this is Ian's website, or there's a face behind the blog, which is partly why I did the video blogs, which I know that you do as well. I think that's one of the reasons that I decided to do that, to try and get some more personality across.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that a bit more, because you know, it's not something that's been picked up by a lot of people yet in our area, in writers' blogs. It's just most writers want to write, not do video. So tell me, you know, obviously one was the personality aspect, but what really changed your mind into doing some videos?
Well, I think two things really, apart from wanting to try and get more personality into the blog, and just to remind people that there was this person that was behind it all. First of all, I find it quite quick and easy to do. And on a purely practical level, it can take, because I'm in all my writing, I'm quite pernickety, and I edit as I go, and I want to make sure everything's pretty much spot on. And that goes for blog posts as well. I don't know how people just fire off a sort of 1,000-word article in 20 minutes and manage to do it. If I have a script of some sort, just sort of two or three notes on what I want to talk about and a general theme, then I can quite comfortably sit in front of my computer as I'm doing now and yak on for 4 or 5 minutes, and then I guess I'm lucky that I've got the technical skills to get the video edited, although I try not to edit it too much, and get it online within about half an hour to three quarters of an hour. So one is on a purely practical level. But the second thing is, and I guess this ties in a little bit with wanting to get personality across, is that I have, part of the reason for having the blog is that when I become, fingers crossed, a published author, that I'm going to be responsible for helping sell the blog as well. And even before I got an agent, you're selling yourself all the time, as well as a book. I think that's the most really important thing to remember these days. And some writers just don't like it. They really hate the idea that an agent or a publisher that it matters what you're like as a person, or how you can talk, or whether you've got a website, or all these kind of things. I know a lot of writers are quite close to, I'm quite close to using the word resent it, because they think it's about the writing. And of course it is about the writing. And you know, a huge part of it is, and your book has to be great, and that's really important. But at the same time, there's not much money about, and the people aren't buying, as in publishers aren't buying lots of books. So how do you stand out? You need to, an agent, or if the book's published, a buyer needs to be able to come to your site and, you know, buy into you as a person. It's not just, they need to know that they can work with you. If it's an agent, they want to come to your website, and part of the thing they're going to be thinking is, can I work with this person? Can I speak to them about edits. Are they going to be comfortable with the things I say? How is it going to work on a practical level? So part of the reason I wanted to do video was to just to show that there's a perfectly normal person behind the writing, and you know, you can hopefully get on with me and I won't be an idiot about things.
No, they're two very straightforward reasons, but... No, I think that is great. And I should add, just as people are listening, I mean, video is taking off in terms of search. And I found, you know, like, for example, I rank in the, you know, number one and number five or something in the word for the word thriller novel. I really want to rank for thriller novel. I mean, that's exactly, you know, so I really don't know, and for search engine optimization, video is just becoming better and better as Google do voice recognition search and all of that type of thing. So even though you don't realize it yet, what you're doing is actually, you know, boosting your search rankings as well. So, I mean, that's just great.
It is. I mean, and that's fantastic. I mean, I'm not ashamed to admit that the videos on Write For Your Life are the least popular posts by some way. The things that get read the most or viewed the most are the written articles. And there's lots of good reasons for that, I guess. I mean, I like watching videos, or I will listen to them while I'm doing other stuff. I will quite happily do that. Same with podcasts. But I can understand why a lot of people don't do that. They're used to a very specific way of consuming media, and that's fine, but it is changing, there is an increase. Yeah. It's getting better. I think as people are getting used to what they are, then they will almost, the videos will probably have an audience of their own almost, and people will be looking out for those. So I'm prepared to, and I think it is the future to a degree.
Yeah, it's mixing and matching. I think we can do all these things. We're versatile.
Absolutely.
Right, now we're almost out of time, but I actually wanted to ask you a question about England, because most of the people I interview on the podcast are Americans, and most of my audience are Americans as well. So it would
say with me too.
Yeah, and on the website. And also clearly I'm English, but I haven't lived in England for nearly 12 years now. So I feel totally out of touch as well. So I thought maybe you could, maybe tell us a bit about what is the market like in England. Like we hear about borders collapsing in America. We hear about big changes there. What's happening in English publishing from your perspective?
I think it's a very similar story to where it is everywhere else. I don't think that much has changed apart from there is less money to go around. People are taking fewer risks. And by people, I mean publishers. They're just whereas 2 or 3 years ago, excuse me, publishers would have taken, I'm not sure risks is the right word, but it's not far off. Would happily sort of spend money on a new author and say, well, we're not sure whether this will sell or not, but we think it's worth the risk. This is real quality work. It's the sort of work that we want. Let's go for it. I think now, inevitably, because there's because of the, you know, the recession and all that, I think that they're taking fewer risks and having to really think about who they take on, and they are starting to look for authors that have a website or a following, and I think it does matter. I think it would be disingenuous to say that it was a deal breaker yet, but it's definitely the way things are going. It's inevitably going to be people are going to be taken on if they have if they know that they can make money back off it, or at least recoup the advance. But at the same time, it's more or less business as usual. I think things are still happening in the same way. Ebooks in Britain are doing okay. I think the iPad has sold pretty well, but of course the main e-reader I still think is the Kindle, certainly for self-publishers. As you know, that's definitely the probably the most popular device, and having used them both, the Kindle is by far the better for reading on. I have a thing about in terms of sort of the future and how ebooks will work and that kind of thing. I think things will go more towards the way of the iPad in terms of the technology. I think it'll have more, because the iPad, of course, is all fancy down. It can play all its videos, and it's, you know, got really versatile. And there are companies, I mean, there's a UK company called, a publisher called Enhanced Editions, And they do some really, really good ebooks that are available for the iPad, and they're available as iPad apps. And I think this is the way that that all books will end up. It'll be more, you'll be kind of, and I think writers will be inevitably end up thinking in this way when they start writing a book. Mm-hmm. So you'll be writing, and they'll be selling and putting together an experience, for want of a better word, rather than just a novel. So you'll, as well as the text, you know, the novel, you'll be expected to, your book will come with interviews with you about your work. Or, I mean, I quite like the idea of alternative endings, that kind of thing. I see it as being almost like DVD extras that sort of come with your book, that provide all this material around it. So, I mean, how often do you get to the end of a book and think, what the heck happened there? Or what was that ending all about? And it'd just be, I can just in the future just see how, I say in the future, I mean, could that easily be done now.
It's happening now, but yeah, more in the future, yeah.
Yeah, so we've got companies like Enhanced Editions, a great publisher. They did Wolf Hall for Hilary Mantel, lots of other great stuff. So yeah, proper high profile. So yeah, I think it's more or less the same as it is anywhere else in the world in England. Mm. Publishers are buying fewer authors or you know, having to think an awful lot more about who they take on. And writers have got to work harder to get noticed and to be patient. And to try and build a bit of a platform before they embark on whichever direction they want to go in, really. Mm.
No, that's great. No, it's kind of good to hear it's the same, and you know, it's interesting. Great. Okay. Well, we're pretty much done. So, where can people find you online?
Okay. So the blog that we've talked about most in this interview has been Write for Your Life, which is you can find at writeforyourlife.net, and it features videos, as we've talked about, of me yakking on. And then we have articles, which mainly I write. We have a few guest posts too. And I do a podcast every fortnight as well with one of my fellow colleagues from work. Talk about copywriting and fiction as well. She's a poet. So that's the main bit. But then if you want to find out more about me, then there's broomstick.net, which is a ridiculous name, I know. So that's broomstick, as in broom with an E on the end, and S. Oh, God, how do you spell shtick?
S-T.
Just put a link on. This is why it's a stupid name. And I post links almost every day to other great articles on the, and then I add a little commentary on the end. So they're the two places, really.
Mm. And on Twitter?
And on Twitter, of course, it's just my name, Ian Broom, which is another unusual spelling, so they'll have to look for the link of that as well.
No, that's great. Well, thanks ever so much for your time, Ian.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time.